Welcome to a new episode of Desk Reject. Today with
Sophie,
Alexander,
Dieter,
and Philip. Let's jump in with a guesstimation question. Is that
yes, we've established that.
We established that. I can work with that. So, what is the difference in percent numbers of students between the student year 18 and 19, so prior to the COVID pandemic, and 20 and 21? So it's the two semesters, like summer and winter. And okay. What's the difference in number of students in Austria in percent? And it can be an increase or a decrease.
So a difference in differences.
No, it's just one difference. It's two numbers and a difference.
It's an increase of 21%.
Okay.
Decrease of 5%.
Mm-hmm. Increase of 15%.
Okay. Great. Now the music starts, right?
Yeah, now you can hear the music. Dun, it's my playing.
Okay, now when this episode airs, I think a new semester will start. We're currently still in the summer feeling, but I will move our brains towards this beautiful time of the year where I call it the true New Year's Eve, actually, when the new semester starts, life comes back to the campus. Research is over, guys. Put it away. Please close your our studios now and focus on what we're really here for, teaching students.
Yes.
And I want to reminisce a little bit because we had an episode already about teaching and how we work with students, and we will now do a little comparison because there are, I think, 2 years in between.
Man, 1.5 years. It was a long time ago.
Yeah. And we will look back, and I will ask you, Sophie, how did your style of teaching change in the last 2 years?
I'm so prepared for this. I think the normal process of being more laid back, less nervous, more relaxed.
Okay, so I think you had a very interesting transformation over the time of your PhD, because I know you a little bit and we had a few conversations. You say now that you're more laid back. Were you always laid back when talking to students?
I was always laid back, but now I'm more confident in what my teaching persona looks like. And I think it's pretty interesting. Like, we had one situation where a student that is your student as well was talking about me, and I think I'm very different when I'm in the classroom than I'm with you guys, for example. So I know that I'm strict, but I'm fair, and I'm determined. I know what I want. I'm transparent.
Determined.
Dieter, do you mind?
Okay, yeah.
Determined.
Okay, but that's interesting. So you're laid back.
Determined. Yeah.
You're more laid back, more towards your feeling of having a right to stand there, not regarding to students. So it's not that you became more strict over time and then less strict again.
Or maybe I know more who I am.
Yeah.
And that it's okay, and that there will always be students that are not like okay with my teaching style, mm-hmm. but this will always be like this. So, and also I'm more confident in my shitty English. So yeah. If I say determined and not determined,
I cannot. 20 seconds ago, we were talking about you need to be more self-confident. And within like 2 seconds, mentioned that
it's just a hedge. It's just a hedge. Alex, how did you develop over time?
How I developed over time. Well, I took teaching a little bit too serious in the beginning, I think. It took me a while to realize that.
It does really matter.
Yeah, I mean, it's the system we're in. It's the system we're in where we're not rewarded for good teaching as a PhD, unless you want to go to, I think we've mentioned that before, but unless you want to go into a teaching role, you're not rewarded for good teaching. You're rewarded for your research, and teaching takes away from your research. So anything you can do to gain efficiency in teaching is good for your career. So basically, long story short, I think I tried to be more efficient in my teaching.
And he's still inefficient, just as a side note. Because it sounds like
you don't care at all. There's a lot of potential. There's still a lot of potential. Still. So,
no, it's a good thing. By inefficient, I mean it's a good thing to be in. Like Alexander's definition of inefficient, or it translates into that he still has, like, what do you use? Which app is it again? This Microsoft OneNote.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So he has one folder for each class he teaches, so many notes inside, coordination things, Excel sheets.
Really?
So he's really like into teaching.
No, I'm just really into being efficient.
That's not efficient.
It is super efficient. I've got predefined templates for pretty much everything.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that to our listeners, because it sounded like Alexander doesn't care about teaching because you're not rewarded. But him doesn't care means that he still does a lot of things.
Did I say I don't care about teaching? I just said I care too much before.
Yeah. At the beginning, and then you moved away. But so preparing and having a template that you can reuse every semester is one technique that you developed in order to get more efficient. Uh-huh. What are other ways that you leverage in order to be more efficient?
Delegating to
people. We're now a productivity podcast. We're not. We're definitely not. I don't want to be like that. Guys, slick around.
You go need to for delegate.
The sun is out.
You need to lead.
Go for a walk. Yeah.
Or shut yourself in a room without windows and do a podcast.
Yeah, it's more efficient because it increases my outreach, but it's also fun because I spend time with my friends, so it's amazing. But anyways,
what's wrong with him?
You made me angry at the beginning, and I needed to calm myself down. So what was the other thing that you do?
I delegate to other people.
To whom?
So we're in a lucky position in the way that we teach with co-lecturers.
And there are always new PhDs that are really motivated.
You can or postdocs. So it's, I think I let go of control, and I'm fine with just, you know,
whatever.
Telling people or asking people what they want to do.
That's great. I have a template. I won't change how I work.
Exactly.
Whatever you like.
But can you please just put it down into this template?
Yeah, literally. I give everybody one note.
Are you very, very like anal about your notes and stuff?
Yeah.
I didn't think so. Yeah, I know. But I think you just exhibit hate the environment. That's why you print it out every time.
Yeah, that too, of course. I do print my OneNote collection every morning.
Print out the internet.
1500.
Dieter, what's your best productivity hack in teaching?
I think it's funny that Alex's efficiency is actually working through the mess to become truly efficient with his templates. Whereas I would define it as writing it down on a sheet of paper and throwing the sheet of paper away.
Great. First in, first out.
No. What was the question?
So, right, we've all bashed me. Now, what was the question?
I want to pile on Alex.
So, assuming that your teaching became more efficient over the last 2 years, mm-hmm. what did you leverage in order to get more efficient?
Honestly, don't think I became more efficient.
Okay. Why not?
Because it's all about productivity.
you guys teach cases, right?
No, Philip does.
I do. Oh, you do. Yeah. You don't?
No.
Okay, then that kind of, because I was going to ask, like, how did that evolve over time?
Dieter teaches how to ride a bicycle.
No, yeah, but becoming more efficient is... Basically, I do it or I don't do it. If I do it, it's not efficient.
But there's usually a learning curve, right? So you do it more often, and at least all the administrative stuff should have been easier or should have become easier over time.
I became more efficient. What I want to basically say is that there are no big hacks here. It's just efficiency that comes with doing it. That's it.
Okay, so you don't use tools in order to become more efficient.
You don't want to be a productivity what do you want me to tell you?
Okay, Finn, your favorite five tools?
I'm just curious because the problem is that I need to agree with you. I don't use tools either, but I just still would be interesting to see what drives your learning curve, right? So either your interaction with students or there's tools, assuming that we get better over time, I think it's interesting on what are the levers that we can pull.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. I get better, I think, but it doesn't mean I have to be more efficient because I don't define being better as being more efficient necessarily. Okay.
What do you define it as?
Just being a better lecturer, right?
What would make you a better lecturer?
For me, I mean, it's just a standard answer, I guess, right? You're more proficient in what you teach and you're better in engaging your audience and thereby achieve better learning results.
In terms of grades or understanding or?
That's a hypothetical understanding, right? Mm-hmm. Because we talked about efficiency getting better, right? But you can just get better in terms of, what you teach so that students take away more from it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're better as mm-hmm. well. You, of course, that always comes with some efficiency.
For me, now that reminds me also what changed is, at least my impression, don't know if that's the truth, is the less you talk, the better to a degree. Like it's not absolute, it's not linear, meaning that if you say nothing, it's the best possible course. And if it's only you talking, it's the worst possible course. But I try to correct trying to feign competence or understanding by overloading me presenting information, but reducing the amount of upfront kind of information and reacting more towards what is asked or what is demanded from students in the moment, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Mm. But I think being able to do so is a function of your understanding becoming more in depth, right? That you can understand where their understanding is currently, that you have a few more examples that you can draw from.
Yeah.
I think this is definitely an increase in your proficiency as a lecturer. Yeah.
But I mean, it's also not so easy to stop talking, right?
I would agree with that. I think I talk, I don't know if I talk more or less.
I think you talk even more, yeah.
I don't know what it is today.
You know,
you're in the hot seat.
I would like to switch. Can we talk about Alex's stupid jacket again? It's hilarious. Anyways, the problem is a little bit that the course that I teach is hard to compare to a traditional course or traditional lecture because it is a case course and they need to present and they need to, so the students need to prepare a lot of input and I only have a few minutes and I need to disagree in a way that I think it is very important to, especially during those case courses, to offer an answer, to offer insight, to tie the cases together. Yeah, I talk a little bit more, but I think, again, this is a function of my deeper understanding and my experience with teaching, I don't know, 20 cases now or 15, 20.
But let's get into that because at least a certain portion of people listening to this, so about 3 to 4, will be teaching at business schools or are teaching at business schools, and case studies is a very popular method. And often I feel if you're not at the WU, or at a German-speaking university, you only learn to teach once you reach kind of postdoc level or system professor level. What were some, you know, hard-learned lessons from teaching cases that you developed, for example, comparing it to the first time we did this episode, if you can remember, to this now, 3 years later?
I think the interesting part of teaching cases is that the cases are written in a way that they lead the student to a conclusion. But usually you can build the exact opposite case based on information that is available from the outside or that you have developed some industry knowledge or something like that. For example, I don't know, Unilever has or
has some ESG goals, strategy, and they show a very polished approach in that, and they show how beautiful it aligns with their let's say financial goals, and everything is roses and butterflies, right? And you can build the exact opposite case that it leads to a lot of confusion, a lot of paradoxes within the organization, a lot of problems, and to discuss the other side that is not visible to the student from who's an undergrad, I think is the most interesting thing. And seeing that in cases and teasing it out, I think is something that you learn over time.
Is that all in the cases, or is that something you just...
The supplementary material helps, but usually supplementary material helps to build the case that is already a little bit obvious. Mm-hmm. So the other, like looking behind the curtain, is a little bit harder and mm-hmm. not based on the information that they provide.
Okay.
But it's not always the case, but I think it's very important for students to understand that information that is provided by the company and cases are provided by the company to a certain degree are... can be, I don't know, that can be, they are shown in a specific way. And mm-hmm. to look behind that, I think it's an important skill. There was a detour. Okay.
Yeah. No, back to the hot seat. I don't know. It's something fast. I mean, that's something probably if we stay in the business school, we'll need to deal with is, or a lot of us need to deal with is how to teach cases, because
teaching cases is still a lot of fun. I can definitely recommend.
Still kind of,
yeah. And it's cool to see that people, like especially master students, I also teach them in a master level, they have a lot of knowledge that exceeds your knowledge,
yeah.
right? Because they invest some time or have some industry experience, and then it becomes more of a discussion
okay.
on the same level. And it's really cool. Okay, I'm starting to bore my co-host. This is always a great sign.
It's just my head back.
And Dieter's attention span of a goldfish. So.
What's the question again?
I know Philip's stories.
Okay, guys, before we get into a real fight today, and it will involve fists, I tell you.
We never had that. That would be
fights.
Fun.
A
something
fist
new.
Fight.
Yeah, let's try it.
Yeah, for you to wake up.
Yeah, no.
So tired. Sorry.
Okay, we get the jet lag through. And what else about students? For one issue that I had in our last episode, I remember it vividly, is that I had a problem of having a clear cut distinction of my role as someone who just left university and is now standing in front
yeah.
and teaching.
I'm old now. I don't have a problem with that anymore.
Yeah, so this, for me, it changed. How is it about you? Did you ever had this problem? Did it change over time? What's your thinking?
I still look like 13, so I still have that problem from my student side. But from me, I feel very distinguished by who I am teaching. Like,
okay.
they stay the same, like
yeah.
17, 18, 19, 20 in the undergraduate level.
Yeah.
And I'm getting older and older, so... I think this also adds to my relaxed mindset.
Yeah.
I know.
Definitely. How was the word for you, Alex?
Yeah, that really bugged me in the beginning, because that was absolutely my approach to being a student, as my understanding of, as I mentioned in the past, was that I felt like people, the classic kind of, if you can't do, then you teach. And that was my idea of professors and assistant professors and PhDs or whatever, that they just failed in the private world.
Really?
Really, it was
same.
very much.
The same,
yeah. yeah. I did not, I mean, that was all I thought, is like, okay, if this person knew what he was talking about, then he would be earning money
yeah,
and not,
yeah.
you know, teaching me at university.
Yeah, true.
And so I brought that kind of energy with me, in the sense of, ooh, I don't want to be that person. In a way, like I don't want to be
yeah, yeah.
be that kind of person that people
like
think
that.
Yeah.
yeah
but after learning, I don't know, that's very, very competitive and is very hard to survive in academics. And plus, there is a very valuable perspective that can be brought from the outside, in the sense of that you've got optimally an unbiased, uncolored opinion of certain topics, like entrepreneurship, which I teach, or strategic planning, that there's value to be added. And so I don't know. I also just kind of added to being a bit more relaxed about the whole thing. Not really, you know, caring about what people think and about my at least what my students think, and just trying to kind of support them and helping them to understand certain concepts. So that changed, definitely changed. Yeah.
Dita, how about you? Like, do you have the feeling that students address you differently than they did at the beginning of the PhD?
Hard to tell, to be honest. I think we would have to do a content analysis of all reviews written on some kind of
if there students, only one a feedback by the students in written form.
Nah, it's always the same.
It's always great.
It's always negative. It stays the same. That actually didn't change. I didn't care for the feedback too much in the beginning. I still don't.
Why? Why
not? No, I have to dial that down. I meant we get the official feedback. I care for that definitely. But, you know, there are also these rating sites, right, for lecturers. And I don't care for them. But yeah, I just think if you get too much feedback, you try to filter out the signal, right? Because basically feedback from somebody who doesn't invest anything into the course, I don't care, right? You have a voice if you bring something to the table.
That's true.
Don't have a voice if you're just there. Mm-hmm. So that's how you want to weight the feedback you get. But basically what changed for me was more like, I guess, becoming more authentic. Like, I didn't present a faked version of myself in the beginning. But just, I guess, you know, well, actually it was kind of the opposite of what you say, Alex, is that I have the feeling that if you're teaching, right, you didn't fail, but you need actually more knowledge than somebody in the private sector. That's just, you know, you have to understand the case in a more comprehensive manner, right? Because if you're just in one company, right, you have this very specific view of it. And that brings kind of a responsibility, right? You have to know more than your audience, a lot more than your audience. Mm. And so this, by becoming more authentic, I mean, is becoming, don't worry that much about having enough knowledge. So it's fine that I don't know enough about it. I can still help students in their own development. And so that's what changed in that sense.
I would also agree with that. Like, that with my experience, I now know how little my students know about that stuff, or how much experience I have, and that this experience is sufficient to be in front and teach something. And that teaching even expands, like, the specific topic that I teach, but also, like, this soft skills and, like, other stuff that they learn in the class.
Yeah, I think now reflecting on it as well, it feels like I'm in the beginning, I thought I have to communicate factual knowledge to students, prepare them and basically deliver a textbook to them orally, but now
worst audiobook ever.
Me yelling at them, sweating profusely.
This is gross stuff.
But now, what I try to do, and I don't know if it works, but this is kind of my approach, is what I learned, just also the combination of teaching and researching, is this idea of the more you know, the more you read, the more you try to do, the less you know, in a sense. And it kind of trains you to be super skeptical about everything. And I got super skeptical about everything. So the one thing I try to do is make my students more skeptical.
Yeah, but I think it's a very important
thing. Yeah, because I teach one course, which is around scenario planning. And it's just you get a lot of preconceived
and
notions.
They have a master there.
Yes, I'm the master scenario planner. But the one thing,
just thinking credit, like cynical, not scenario planning. Sorry.
Oh yeah, I'm a master, definitely master cynic, and I try to tone that down. But I still try to get them, rather than imparting some kind of here's the factual knowledge you need, and this is the books you need to read, and this is the articles. More in the sense of, you know, when you read something, try and,
it's probably bullshit.
Yeah, it's probably someone has an agenda. Probably someone's trying to tell you what to think. Yeah. So, you know, be your own thinker, that brilliant autobiography of Steve Jobs you read, you might not want to take everything in there so seriously and think about why, rather than here are the five lessons that we can learn from Bill Gates and Steve Jobs based on me reading all of their autobiographies. That's how I changed my teaching style, I think.
Yeah, I really like
over
that.
Time.
Great. Let's look into the future. I have one more question before we move to the future. But it is in the future as well. what is something that you would be still afraid of? Like, what would be a setting that would pose a challenge to your teaching in general?
Me teaching physics or anything like
that. In your field. Yeah. Okay. For me, teaching it in Polish.
Getting attacked by sharks.
Thank you, yeah.
Teaching in a shark
teaching
tank?
Sharks.
Yeah, teaching.
Or in a shark tank.
Yeah. I think MBA students.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's a
it's
whole
different.
I think that would put me in a whole new level of being nervous, similar to, even though I've presented my research multiple times, every time before I present it, I do get nervous because this underlying, you know, not fear, but thinking like there's people, sometimes there's people in the audience, and some, usually those people have been doing what I've been doing for longer, and I'm very unsure about what I'm talking here. And so similar with MBA students that tend to be from industry, I think that would be pretty intimidating.
They
first.
Paid for it, so you need to provide.
Exactly, yes.
You need to provide value.
Mm. I'm too naive. I would just like, hi, I'm naive.
Yeah.
Naive.
No.
Welcome
continue.
To English
Sorry,
with Philip.
No. I just didn't understand.
No, it's okay. Like, people who listen to us, who were learning German with
they
us.
They paid for it. they demand value.
No, but yeah, that I think that is exactly is. A lot of the times when I screw up, my go-to kind of safe place is, yeah, I mean, they're not paying. What are they expecting? I'm an underpaid PhD, they're not paying. Kind of like if I really, really screw up, and I do, I to save myself from falling in a deep pit of despair is this go-to of, well, you know, what
it's
do they expect?
Yeah,
I mean, really, kind of self-preservation mechanism. But with MBAs, this, wow, they paid a lot of money. They want to see me deliver. And if I don't deliver, I can't go back to the, yeah, I mean, kind of attitude of, fuck you then. So, yeah.
Right, so, teaching in a shark tank, teaching MBA students, Peter, do you have anything?
No, I agree with the MBA case. I think that's... Yeah, the most prominent one.
Yeah. For me, it would be teaching a very typical lecture, as you said, like where you need to present an audiobook. I never did that, actually.
Yeah, that too, yeah.
And a huge audience, right? So the main hall.
Oh, you would love
like
that.
1,000 people. I would love it, but I would also be afraid of it. And yeah. I think it would need some time to because I think I would take it way too personal. If people start throwing paper planes or start grilling Würstchen in the back or something like that.
As you do.
I think I would get very annoyed with that. Start yelling and throwing.
Also like a methods course. Like something I really want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'd really love to do, but something I'd be super super self-conscious about teaching anything that involves hard proofs. Or where you can...
Mathematical proofs?
Yeah.
Where you can be
theoretically,
wrong.
Yeah. Where like, also oh, yeah, go to, like, if someone challenges me in if it would be a case or entrepreneurship or whatever, I can always kind of, you know, say, like, either, valid opinion, or, yeah, you know,
opinion,
good point.
Man.
But if I write, I don't know, if I show the wrong proof on my slides of the OLS estimator, I can't be like, oh, yeah, it's
blue?
A good,
is
that's a
really
good
blue?
Opinion. Yeah, that's, yeah, we'll, you know, I'll think about that. No, it's either right
it's
or
right.
wrong. So these kinds of, like you said, these kind of lectures where you're really teaching something and there is a lot of wrong and one right, you know,
yeah.
way to do it, and be also with code or whatever. When I have, it's, I don't know, that would also be definitely the first. I really want to do it, but that would make me nervous as well.
I mean, you can think about the benchmark, right? The benchmark is all the teachers or professors you had in the past in your studies. And I think, oh my God, like the majority was not good at all, right? Like they were terrible teachers. Mm-hmm. And so that makes it easier.
Okay, that's a good point.
But it's the same with the MBA. Like I wouldn't care about that the MBAs are paying, because they do not pay you directly. Your university appointed you.
No,
to teach this class.
I'm not sure about that.
No, that's like either you're at a university where you're receiving a premium salary because you're teaching MBA courses, so the MBA courses are actually, you know, paying your salary more or less directly, or you get to teach MBA courses and there's some kind of benefit in terms of monetary or not. So I don't think it's a matter of, you know, oh well, I was appointed to teach MBA courses.
Okay, then
so
never mind.
I mean, I also think that business schools have those KPIs of how many people want to be in your course and what's your evaluation, and it matters to your tenure track. I don't know if it matters for your tenure track to get it in the end, but I think it's still.
But that's interesting. Maybe I write a paper about it.
And when you're a full professor, then it's really important. That's why a lot of full professors don't really do a lot of real research anymore, because they need to do a lot of teaching because it pays well and it's what they need to do.
But that's interesting. Like my research is on monetary payment, like you, and how it influences people's behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting question, how high monetary compensation alters your teaching style or nervousness, and then also how you teach and stuff. Can we not publish this episode until I have my data ready?
it will be gone in a second.
I think that's, you know, that must have been studied in the context of education before, because how much do you pay teachers, right? I mean, in high school and so on.
Yeah.
And in what sense is there a very intrinsic motivation behind becoming a teacher?
Yeah.
So
I don't know if it's been looked at. At the university level.
Yeah. Because it's different in university.
Like, again, a business university should be different, because there you're only there for the money, right? Yeah.
What I observed a few times is that especially business professors really like moving towards more or educating MBAs, because there they see an actual impact. Right, so they did a lot of research, and then now there's a salience bias towards Wharton and Harvard and so on. But there, a lot of people really like the teaching with MBA students, and when they are asked what's your impact on society, is that then they tell you about what kind of great managers learn great stuff from them.
I also think they see them as a data source, right?
Also,
just in front of them, they are the faces, and then they seem like. A survey.
So I think this trajectory towards that.
In consequence, we're starting an MBA course.
We are starting one.
Yeah,
that will be. It's very cheap.
Yeah,
it's a low cost offer. Guys, let's look finally in the future. Are you still looking forward to teaching, or is it something that you look at with fear in your eyes?
Fear.
I'm looking forward to next semester, because I designed a new class. And I'm really, really, really excited to...
What's the class?
It's for a master's degree.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a debate class.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it negotiation or is it debate?
It's debate.
So it's with an audience. So the goal is the audience decides, or is it...
Okay. You want to ask particular questions and I answer them like in a row, or I just explain it?
No, please, I want a meta answer about your way of answering the question.
Okay, wait. So the class is about entrepreneurship, and we teach the students how to read scientific papers, and then for every class we have one motion. For example, entrepreneurial teams are better when you found with friends versus they're not. And then there are two teams preparing arguments for or against the motion. It's like at the conference that we...
That's super cool.
Yeah. And then they debate in class. And afterwards, we have a voting which side wins.
Okay.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
right?
Really cool.
So that's why I'm very excited to teach that.
Yeah. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that.
I want to take part.
Yeah, you can.
Crush those.
Yeah, this is the debate.
Because we're also thinking of, yeah, we want to invite like practitioners.
Oh yeah, I'm the number one entrepreneur.
It's really rude, actually, Sophie. Don't be like that.
Sorry, yeah. I thought he was on the hot seat now.
No, no, no. I would support him.
But that sounds awesome.
Yeah. Do you look forward to next mess, Alex?
Well, I'd be lying if I say I do. But I also know deep down inside that if it was only research, no teaching, I'd probably over time get very frustrated. But you know, the feeling right now is it's something I have to do and things you have to do. Yeah, it's not something I'm terribly looking forward to, but usually once it gets closer, once I get to interact with the students again, it's just kind of, it's a nice kind of instant gratification situation where you interact with people again.
And are liked.
Yes, and they
can show your smartness.
And, absolutely. Yeah. So, I don't know. Right now, no. But, and then the closer it gets, even less, because I'll be stressed the fuck out. But once I'm, once it gets 1 or 2 days before and I'm at maximum stress level, then I start looking forward to it.
Nice. You done?
Yeah, actually, I copy-paste Alex's answer, just without the stress level.
Jesus, I hate you so much.
Yeah, me today as well.
There'll be one day before the kickoff, Dieter will be posting pictures of him on a mountain with his
You're very right. Like, actually, my holidays are all the way up, until the very last day.
Oh, that's so insane of you.
Yeah, it's super.
Now, there's like one day I am coming to the office just for emergency case.
Just to sleep a bit.
Talking about
but
efficiency.
I mean, it's actually a kickoff I do together with Philip. I think it's that day. Yeah.
What? Mm-hmm. Okay.
One of our courses. And so, I mean, we've done it
a billion times now. And yeah. I never repair. So,
yeah. So you know where I got my calmness from.
Yes.
Oh my god, okay.
If I prepare too much, I get stiff and it's not believable.
That's disgusting.
It's not authentic.
Never
like
happened
you,
to
like
him.
You're prepared for this episode as a host?
Yes, it's very authentic and you are helping a lot with that. I'm looking forward to being in class. I hate all the stuff around it and always I forget something that I needed to send to the students and then they come to class and say, oh, we never received this mail. Like, oh, Jesus, can you please? I don't know.
Send it yourself.
Gee, oh man.
Oh yeah, you didn't take the course last semester. Oh yeah, right.
Well, professor, we don't have the cases yet. We don't. Really? It's fascinating. It's great.
That's yes, exactly going as planned.
Yeah, we'll start with the cases next week. Yeah. No, okay. Yeah. Anyways, do we have an ad?
Yes, we do. So let's see if I can get this through. I'm super thirsty. Today's episode is brought to you by LinkedIn.
Did
we have LinkedIn already?
No,
we didn't. Okay. The number one source for self-flagellation and bigotry by people that feel superior because they don't have an Instagram account.
We need LinkedIn.
Do you want to hear more from distant acquaintances that have achieved absolutely nothing in their professional life and have no right to voice their opinion about any topic of relevance? Then this professional social media service might be the perfect choice for you. You will be able to learn some of the most important startup success tips from people whose experience is based on Richard Branson's autobiography and a failed build your own startup online MBA certificate. Get your dose of feel bad from your high school classmate that is selling authentic seashell jewelry on Bali after taking 12 years to finish his bachelor's degree in marketing and communications. All due to a little bit of hard work, skill, and a small trust fund by his parents. Just don't forget to brush up that online profile of yours by explaining in minute detail how the three-week internship at Tesco during high school taught you invaluable life lessons in leadership and project management. Philip, yeah. Who is your favorite LinkedIn influencer?
I don't have a favorite one, but I totally agree with that.
Richard Branson.
No, they're all equally
I can't
brilliant.
Really, no, I really hate those personal stories. It's so bullshit. And then I made this experience and it taught me something. And, well, I can't deal with it.
They're authentic.
They're not. They're the opposite of authentic.
But no, you can always have this, like, the one way around. Like, I also made a mistake once. So LinkedIn is always about successes, but life is a lot about failures as well. And I had a failure once and I learned so much, and now I'm a PhD in Harvard and my parents bought me an airplane.
I love the I'm leaving this place now and I want to thank pretty much everybody and the cleaning staff and and so now grateful. I'm coming to this new opportunity and Everything is great. Oh, there's so many flavors of bullshit on LinkedIn. It's
how are you about sharing like personal like your birthday or something like that, you know, that's basically unrelated to your job on LinkedIn?
That would be cool. I'd love to see more of that. Just people kind of just, you know.
I was super drunk and then I got in a fight and I realized I was fighting just a dog.
check out this new Lego set I built.
It's really crappy. It's like really shit.
Life lessons. Just like, look, I built this. It's not, I'm missing a few pieces, but. Yeah,
and my dog is choking on the tire.
That's probably the piece.
But how do you envision a perfect LinkedIn?
Well, I envision a perfect LinkedIn is no LinkedIn anymore. Yeah. I think LinkedIn is more toxic than Instagram.
It was
Facebook
a lot of
Twitter
fun
put
when
together.
You just look at like where people were and stuff like that, and I still use it for that.
But so we just delete the feed.
The feed was the wrong decision.
Okay. Put it back to goddamn CVs
just
online.
The CVs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or if it would be like, but that's Reddit, right? Reddit or Twitter. If you want to discuss something and go somewhere else.
Yeah, that's right.
And the positivity on LinkedIn drives me nuts. I don't know if I'm too European for that or if I spend too much time with Alex. I don't know, but it drives me nuts. Life sucks. And please recognize it as
word.
Such.
And today's episode from LinkedIn.
This is just the most brilliant, important life lesson is life sucks and it can always get worse.
And if you accept that, it's fine. It's not good or anything, but it's okay.
just don't get your hopes up and then you can't be disappointed.
Yeah.
Would it be so nice to update your LinkedIn with that sentence?
Oh, I'll start posting some life lessons.
I will, yeah.
Stop hoping. Just kind of wake up and, you know, survive the day. And that's a success. With that being said, if you tag Desk Reject in your next inspirational LinkedIn article, you'll get 10% off the LinkedIn certificate course on how to successfully launch a podcast for the smallest possible listenership. And that is our longest ad segment thus far, I think.
It was really good.
It was more of a discussion. But
do an episode about it because I think the rest of LinkedIn, like the algorithm for jobs and so,
but
works
fine. The problem is LinkedIn,
in the ad.
Who are they trying to target? The one that pay for it are HR people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's why it's so shitty.
Yeah.
Right? If it would be just having an interesting conversation, then it's people want to show off and people want to be found. And that's why it sucks.
So what was the difference in...
Yeah. The thing is, you all sucked as well. So... No, the problem is that you said -5, right?
Yeah.
And you're the closest to the true answer because it's -3.
Okay.
So it's a difference of 8. And you said +15, right?
Yeah.
And you said 21, 25. Yeah. So you're all wrong in a different way.
We're all three flavors of wrong.
Yeah. But I like Peter's flavor the best. I don't know. But it increased to very minor degrees. Like, 376,000 moving up to 387,000.
That's
students.
Insane amount.
But
of
I think the main problem, well, I didn't find any data, but my assumption is that just fewer people finished and then they accumulated. So it's not new students, it's students that are inscribed, part of the system.
Inscribed.
Yeah.
Now enrolled. I can teach you English.
Thank you.
You're just trying to
I'm so grateful for your information on.
Yeah.
For anybody that's listening to this in school, study business.
And be nice to us.
Yeah, just a great, you know, we need to get paid. We need more. We need more professor positions in business school. So, yeah. You know, forget about physics and Maschinenbau.
Maschinenbau.
Civil engineering. Guys, see you next week. And don't make me angry. Like,
how about the little piece?
I am. Oh, true. Okay. Yeah, thank you too for listening to our great podcast. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook not anymore, Twitter, and please let's not do LinkedIn. I think it will suck.
Oh,
we will try it
out.
Is
there LinkedIn on there?
No, not yet, but okay. Sophie suggested.
Just because you said that it's for people that feel
superior. We would get very like great feedback of people who never listen to our podcast. Something like, yeah, it's so great that you do that. It's so interesting. Something like that.
Once, yeah.
If you want to leave some true reviews, then leave them on Apple Podcasts and anywhere else. If you review... okay, I didn't write that. But if you post a review in September, is it possible to submit it? Because the episode will air after September, right?
True.
Wake me up when September ends. But if you do so, then you will win a Python bootcamp with me. It will be awesome. We will do list comprehensions all day. The intro, outro, and music is by Blue Dot Sessions, and then we will discuss why Python is better than R. And it's produced by Alexander Staub and Sophie. The logo is created by Stefan Kardosch by Creative Prism, and we got some generous help by the WU TV team that provided us some equipment. Guys, survive the next semester. You're strong, you're smart, you can do that. You earned the place that you have in front of the class.
Coming to you on LinkedIn.
Go get it, Tiger. See you next time.
I'm waving to nobody in particular.
It's a podcast, it's a different medium.
Sophie? So, yeah? Yeah, du machst auch den Podcast.
Wirklich?
Mhm.
Okay.
Ja, und
was
und
war das? War es ein Typ?
Es war ein Typ. Und der meinte auch nochmal, ja, voll cool, dass ihr das macht und so. Und dann hat er auch gefragt, so, ja, was macht ihr denn heute Abend bei welchen Socials? So, und er war so ein bisschen schüchtern. Dann habe ich dem sogar meine Handynummer gegeben.
Okay, natürlich. Wow.
Okay.
How to handle a coffin.